Welcome to Unfractured. I'm your host, Connor Cyrus. We are still feeling the impacts of George Floyd's murder. In many ways, the one-year anniversary of his murder was inspiration for this series and the topic of our first episode. His death was over a year ago, but we continue to see changes and highlight what injustice looks like. The past 15 months have been nothing short of emotionally taxing for Black people. So my colleague Myra Flynn, an engagement producer at Brave Little State, started the series Homegoings, a show that dives into the elaborate funerals, traditionally for Black people, filled with music, food, grief, and oftentimes joy, because some of us choose to celebrate life even when it's finished. So with George Floyd's death as the backdrop of this series, Myra decided to blend her two passions, journalism and music, to create Homegoings. Myra, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Connor.
Myra, let's just dive right into it. This is both a coming home and a coming out for you. It's a homecoming because you're a native Vermonter, but it's also a coming out because this is the first time many people are hearing your voice as a reporter and not as a musician. How does that feel?
I feel like it's been such an honor and a privilege, honestly. It's like I came here with all of my weirdness in a backpack, and everyone at VPR has been like, yes, thank you, hand it on over. Was not expected at all. But yeah, it was a really great way to kind of showcase who I am, my values, and what matters most to me regarding audio, beauty, interviews, personal relationships, engagement, all in one.
What this is and what this was a marker of the anniversary of George Floyd's murder. And that seems to be a common theme, if not a motivation behind Homegoings. How did George Floyd's death impact you as a person?
Me as a person? Well, I think the fact that it was so highly visible, my Facebook feed and my Instagram feed did not feel safe. And then also just fielding a lot of like white allies, friends, community, non-allies, having these drastic reactions to it because it was so fully documented for the first time, and kind of fielding everything from like Venmo'd reparations of like $20 here and there to like holding space to like make them feel better. And it was a really tough time. You know, I don't know if Mr. Floyd knows this wherever he is, just how much his death really changed the world.
And so his death is, you know, almost the an inspiration for Homegoings. When I think about Homegoings, I think about New Orleans. I think about just like the colors and the party, the parade. And, yeah, you know, in the Black community, that's what my mom says. She says that she wants a Homegoing because she doesn't want people to be sad, because I think that as Black people, we're able to compartmentalize trauma in a way that maybe other people are not, because we are exposed to it so much that we're able to, in the saddest moments, find joy in all of this. So I was really excited when you were like, let's do Homegoings. And I was just like, damn, that's a good idea. Like, what a great way to celebrate Black culture here in Vermont. So
thank you.
What's been the response been to people that have heard these episodes?
Yeah, well, I think from people who kind of leaned on it from an educational perspective, like there's a lot that they did not understand surrounding a homegoing, or really how the BIPOC community here in Vermont has been grieving. I think it was quite helpful. The feedback I've been getting is kind of like, yeah, thanks for parceling out like the different corners or framework, I guess, of Black emotions, and knowing that it's so different to our own. Because what I didn't want is also this anniversary coming up and a bunch of people coming up to me being like, I'm so sorry, are you okay? You know, I also just wanted to show that there is some joy that weaves throughout. So people have been, I feel, respecting kind of what they've learned in the episodes. And I think that's really great. You know, that's what I came back to Vermont to do. And then there's also folks like, I've heard some comments that are just like, you know, you've done this in a real way that won't make people upset. Good job.
How does that make you feel? Because I feel like you kind of want to make some people upset. Maybe not upset. How about uncomfortable?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm an artist, and I think art is highly controversial, and I have the wherewithal and the space to do that in my own art. And this is also a segment for VPR, and we are also in a predominantly white state where I want to figure out how to, like, slip in some vegetables with a side of cake. How does it make me feel? Not great. Like, I want Vermont to be able to listen to folks, whether it's palatable or not, and still hold space for those voices.
You know, and so as I listen to these episodes and as the listeners listen to them, you talk about four pillars: joy, rage, grief, and healing. Tell me about those four emotions and why you chose to focus on those four in these episodes.
Yeah, I think healing was the one that I struggled with the most. I don't know that the anniversary of George Floyd's death is really the best time to really focus on healing. And I started to get nervous about not wanting the newsroom to go too much in that direction of, like, it's been a year, let's tie this up with a nice bow. How has the BIPOC community moved on? And I think the answer I'm trying to highlight with these pillars is that we move on, and then we move back, and then we move sideways, and then we stay centered every day as Black people, and don't check for us to have an ending to any of these feelings anytime soon. These need to be cycled through, and what we really need you to do is listen. So
these emotions are really just, and this series is really less about death and more of just how we survive.
Totally. There's in Don Cherie's fourth and final episode of Homegoings, there's a line in there that actually Angela Evansy, my team leader at Brave Little State, my team leader, she put in there, which is like, yeah, you know, how do we wrap this up? Let's talk about not so much how we die, but how are we living, right? Like, how do we live?
So let's talk a little bit about some of these episodes. And obviously, it's all focused on the music. How did you pick these songs? So there's four artists, four songs. How'd you pick the artists, and how'd you pick the song to represent each artist?
You know, I really let the artist pick the song. My job at the top of each interview, which I should do some sort of compilation because I asked the same question at the top of each one, was to really explain Homegoings, explain my grandmothers, explain these four pillars, and to ask if they had a song in mind that they thought would fit within one of those four pillars. And I thought maybe the response would be that I would get you know, folks saying, well, this is my rage song or this is my mourning song. But no, actually, it was more about this is a song that encompasses all of them, just like Homegoings, just like Black people themselves. So it was really cool. The episodes picked them. I felt so lucky.
Can I put you on the spot for a little bit?
I don't know. Aren't you already?
I'm curious. If you had to have an original song to send George Floyd home, the same way that you asked these artists to, is there a song in your repertoire that you would choose? And if so, which one?
Does it have to be original?
I'm going to say yes.
Because Amazing Grace is what I sang at my grandmother's homegoing. And so when I think about Black churches and I think about Black funerals and ceremonies, I think about that song a lot. But you want one of my songs? I see what you're into.
I'm just curious. I just want a little bit more Myra Flynn. So if I can get that, maybe this might help. What emotion would you choose to send George Floyd home with?
I tap into my sadness pretty easily. Just as a person, I've always been a little melancholy. It's something I've learned not to hate. And I think... I think about a deep sadness that's within. That's something I'm not always super forward about. I'd probably sing a song of mine called Morning Time, which it kind of sounds like it's about a lover, but really the lover is America. And you want me to sing it, Connor?
I mean, I wasn't going to ask, but if you're going to.
Yeah, it's something like... our love is like a wounded soldier. I think that he forgot to come back home. Left a love outside
and it got colder. I need help, 'cause it's the only love I know. So give me warm, give me warm. I need to feel you in my bones. Give me warm, give me warm.
Chills. I'm a little bit speechless right now, so let me just like collect my thoughts after hearing that. But what a great song, because it almost goes back to what you were talking about earlier with like the Negro spirituals and having those come from such a place of sadness. And that was even a theme in one of your episodes, which is just like a lot of Black music that people bop to comes from a place of sadness.
Right.
So as people are listening to these so far four episodes of Homegoings on Brave Little State,
.org.
What do you hope they take away from it?
What I hope is that we can be human beings in the ears of the listener and in the eyes of the community, because I do believe all of these different fights that are going on regarding, Black Lives Matter, regarding, Gay Straight Alliance, just any of these things going on. It's all a fight towards normal. It's all a fight towards the ability to just live your life normally without being underrepresented or misheard or disenfranchised or have violence, sought against you or your family members. So it's all a fight towards humanity. And I hope that I, was able to unpack these people enough to actually be seen as people. And I get nervous that no matter what, some of white Vermont might be so overwhelmed by all of this change happening at once, that no matter how carefully or consciously I tried to unpack that, it will still be heard as, oh God, she's still talking about race. Oh God, all they do is talk about race. But, it's not just about race. It's about a person. Each episode is about a beautiful person that I handpicked for you, Vermont.
So how do you respond to that criticism? Because, obviously, like you said, it's a lot of change very quickly, and it's very Black. And I think that it's not the norm. So I can imagine that there's a lot of criticism that this is too much, too Black, and I don't want to hear it. Mm. How do you respond to that?
I respond by saying, welcome to dipping a toe into the Black experience daily, where absolutely none of the voices, faces, music, or anything around me represented my culture. So it's not going anywhere. I'm starting to have a bit more faith in this revolution. And so I'd say, pick a lane, of sorts, because it's not going anywhere, and because VPR is boldly, I think, making some changes where we're really trying to up the listenership surrounding familiarity and cultural influence for Black listeners as well, you got to get used to it. And hopefully you get used to it and you like it. And hopefully those goals are met with bravery and grace.
Now, I want to ask if you have a favorite episode, but we both know that is... you can't answer that because they're all amazing. So let me ask you, what do you love about each episode?
Oh, goodness, so much. First of all, I love the first one on Bobby Hackney Jr. because he is a punk rock Black musician, and all of his brothers are in the band, and they are also Black, and it's like this inherited punk rockness that came from his family death, which he didn't even find out about until he was an adult, really, and had his own kids, that they were in this band. And punk rock music is inherently from a massive problematic music genre, steeped in skinheads and, things that it's just a real way of like taking back this genre. And I just love Bobby because he's such a soft-spoken individual. And then you listen to the music and he is screaming his face off. And I'm like, yes, it's just so great. Sinite Tomlinson is just this like beautiful human being who wants to feed you and wanted to interview me as much as I was interviewing her. And we probably had 6 or 7 different Zoom meetings. And I also, her song and her video that's up on the website, definitely want to put a trigger warning out there. There's quite a bit of violence in the video, but if it feels good to you, it is amazing. I thought her display of that was wonderful. Ravon Calderon, you know, he was both the most fun and the saddest interview of all of them because he's a hip hop artist and he's all about trying to like kind of recoup his own joy and not always have to be such a conscious rapper and instead get back to like having fun. But he also talks about his own mortality and how he visits that those thoughts daily as a brown man in Vermont in America. So that juxtaposition is super cool. And then it ends with Dawn Cherie, who, I mean, what to say? Dawn Cherie is a witch. She's a practicing witch. So, like, I'll begin with that. and she has a lot of things in practice for her own self-care. And she was my most pragmatic interview as well. She's got a very clear vision of how she's dealing with this racism in America and all these changes. And it was just lovely to speak with somebody who's maybe not as much a bleeding heart as me all the time, but then her music sounds like this sweet gospel. I think I called it honey-soaked pain.
So when you're putting these episodes together, what are some of the challenges that come with compiling it? Because, girl, I know you, and these tapes are hours long, and you talk about the tears, and you talk about the vulnerability and the pain. What's the audience not seeing in the final copies of these episodes?
Yeah, well, clearly a lot of tape. We did, you know, talk deeply and for a long time. But I think probably what the audience isn't seeing is my own nervousness about feeling like I had to be an authority in these episodes and speak for an entire group of people, which is not my right nor my desire. So I really struggled when writing my scripts of how to enter in myself and to educate, right? Because that's also part of our job here at VPR as reporters. We are responsible for educating folks and then also just not wanting to feel like I'm only talking to white people and trying to educate them. Like, I want the community of color to listen to these episodes and find some familiarity in them as well. So straddling a lot of lines is what it felt like, and that was tough.
Does that translate into your normal life as much as it does into your professional life?
Connor, I see why you got this job here, VPR. Yes. I mean, yeah, absolutely, right? It's definitely a thing that's just always top of mind for Black people. And I don't know if that's the case for everyone else, but that code switching that comes in daily to really figure out how to take care of others, how to educate others, how to others, right? And then at the end of the day, you're just like, oh, gosh, you know, I get off and I finish editing and I look at my daughter and just try to reset a little bit and remember that she is really most important in everything I'm trying to highlight in these episodes for other people. It's really all for her.
We talk about others. And what I really want to know is, do you think a white person, in this case, the other, could do homegoings?
Oh, great question. And also, I try to be careful about calling other people the other. I just mean, like, when I use the term others, I'm trying to say I tend to take care of myself last. Like, everything is for other people. But my goal with homegoings is that a white person does it next and that baton is passed. Because I would love to see somebody who is a white ally trying to gain that trust, that deep listening of those episodes, and try to understand something about Black culture like a homegoing, and do that research just as much as, you know, people who look like us. And I think that responsibility is a deep one. And I hope that the fear of making mistakes, because you will make them, and I made plenty while making these episodes, doesn't get in the way of folks actually wanting to give it a try.
What were some of the surprises that came with putting these episodes together? Like, what did you learn? And we can start with, what did you learn about yourself?
I learned that I do have something kind of close to an emotional burnout. That can happen. Yeah, that was something that I learned, not because of the people or the interviews. Those were all lovely. But again, just taking myself to task daily and just being really hard on myself, like wanting to make sure I represented it properly.
Well, in fairness, it was your first big project yes. here at VPR. You had just moved. You're a fairly new mom.
Yeah.
And this is very emotional stuff for all Black people because we don't get to turn this off. We live it every single day, then we come to work and do it. So I understand the emotional burnout, and I think that a lot of BIPOC people will understand what you mean by that. But I just wanted to put it into context for people listening, what that looks like for you, what that looks like for us, because it really is like when we work and do BIPOC issues, especially trauma, we don't get to go home and leave it because we're still Black. At the end of the day, Black and beautiful, but still Black.
But still Black.
In this fourth episode with Dawn Cherie, what are some of the conversations that didn't make it in that you want people at home to know that you had those conversations or that Dawn Cherie had these emotions or had this conversation with you?
Yeah, I think just for timing's sake, we had to take it out. But Dawn Cherie spoke a lot about her nephew and how, you know, I think one of my favorite lines was like, you know, my nephew is the age of the usual suspect. And that moment was just amazing because I just, you know, she is not a mother, right? But she is a mama in the big sense of the word. And she is aware of the Black men and Black women. Her niece is also coming up on that age as well around her who are at risk. And like, Vermont is just so well-intentioned and is doing such great work, but could not possibly have the context, right? No matter how much DEI work you do or no matter where you donate to, really what it's like to feel fearful for your own family members and to feel it again in some cases with elders who have already marched in the 60s and 70s and civil rights movements or some folks, Brown versus the Board of Education, some of those folks are still here with us. And then to have to revisit this all over again and what that trauma, you know, feels like, what triggers show up. My show at Juneteenth, when someone showed up with a KKK hood during the show, all I could think about were those elders and really what that hood represents for them. And, you know, just we need to get better. We all need to, we're sick and we all need to get better.
On the flip side, I think to piggyback off what you just said, there's also the conversation that I don't know if Vermont's ready to have about specifically Black boys when, and I think this is what Dawn Cherie was talking about, when they go from being cute Black boys to being Black men.
Right.
And that happens at about age 11, 12, and 13.
Right.
And what did she, like, I guess, can you go into a little bit more about what she said about he's now the age of a suspect?
Of the usual suspect, yeah, he's starting to look like the threat, right? I mean, one of the things I've learned in my own Blackness is that Black men and women are not afforded innocence. So even when we're very young, we're treated very old. And then when we're just reaching puberty, we're treated like grown women or grown men. And for Black men, for the longest in this country, in particular, they have been perceived as threatening. Have you experienced anything where people have perceived you as a threat?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, the list goes on and on and on just from being at the grocery store, pumping gas, if I leave the gym and I'm in a hoodie. You know, it's like we're very conscious of these things.
Yeah.
But to wrap up the conversation before we listen to this episode, in this particular episode with Dawn Cherie, what do you want people to take away from it?
What I want folks to get from this episode is that, you know, what a graceful way to be in this world. And you can always link up with her about how to be a witch if you need some other external things, because it sounds like she's very in tune with nature and is able to do a lot of healing, right? And self-care. I'm not a huge fan of that term, but, you know, what kind of things are in place to keep you resilient? That's what I would say to any Black community or any BIPOC community who's listening to this episode. She's very good at having some practices in place to keep herself functioning, surviving, healing, and moving forward, which is what we all need.
We are now going to listen to the fourth episode featuring Dawn Cherie. Here's Homegoings.
Danshree, you also are an accountant, correct? So this is...
No, I'm not an accountant. I'm a bookkeeper.
You're a bookkeeper. Excuse me. Yeah. A bookkeeper. I know. I don't know. Like tax season, I don't know the difference.
That's Danshree setting me straight. And I kind of had a big moment in adulting in learning this difference. Maybe many of you already know this, but an accountant can only give you insights based on your bookkeeper's records of you. So while your accountant is there to keep track of your money, your bookkeeper is kind of there to keep track of you. Their records are a finite recording of all the little daily choices you make. Your food, your clothes, your bills, your art. Choices that make you authentically you. When she's not making her lyrically sophisticated soul folk music, Burlington-based Danshree is keeping the books for other artists of color in Vermont. And might I say, in a time and place where we might feel kind of disappeared, it's nice to know that there's a Danshree out there keeping track of us, authentically.
I'll be completely blunt here. I think artistic responsibility is to be authentic wherever you are, like whatever spot you've landed on right now, is to just be authentic in it.
Welcome back to Homegoings, a special series from Brave Little State. I'm Myra Flynn. Since the one-year anniversary of the murder of George Floyd, we have been sharing conversations with Vermont musicians of color and taking a deep listen to one of their songs. In today's episode, I talk with Danshree about compassion and artistic authenticity. I guess I've been doing a little bookkeeping myself in these episodes of Homegoings. I've been keeping record of Black art and the four pillars of response in a post-Floyd era: grief, joy, rage, and healing. Today, Danshree graciously let me keep her books, and the longer we talked, the more I realized how she doesn't just align with one of these feelings.
I am all over the place when it comes to thinking about Black death, specifically at the hands of the law enforcement.
She cycles through them all, and often. Grief.
You know, this is not the first ugly, horrific thing that we have had to absorb because, you know, white America just didn't want to see it.
Joy.
On one hand, I'm very proud of how the community came together.
Rage.
And I'm very broken about the loss of these folks to their families. Breonna Taylor, Sandra Bland, like, I'm heartsick about it. And then that leads to rage, and I am furious and fearful.
And healing.
I am a practicing witch. So I find my comfort in nature, hanging out with my pets, writing lyrics. As long as I can ground, then I'll be okay.
Danshree helped me realize that these feelings are not mutually exclusive.
It just spirals again and again and again. And then I write myself and get it under control just to go through it all again.
And at the center of that spiral is our humanity. Danshree says that living here in Vermont has a lot to do with preserving hers.
So let's say the world is on fire around me, and yet it's springtime outside here in lovely Vermont, and everything is green, and there are like a gazillion birds outside my back door right now, and I'm watching my dog chase a bee around the yard, and I have this moment of calm and contentment, and a song comes out of that.
Room is bleeding on a top.
I can guarantee you that that also connects with somebody who is wistfully wishing that they were sitting on their back porch looking at the same scenes. You know what I mean? So I think artist's responsibility is to just be authentic in the moment and whoever we are and however we arrived, and that's it. And that's, and the world just kind of has to deal with that.
Nina Simone once said, it's an artist's responsibility to reflect the times. But if you've taken a good look around, it's hard to miss just how different times are looking these days. A lot of us and our art have been inside for a long time, and that time has coincided with a surge in racial awareness. So, in a place like Vermont, where Black performers are already used to being in the spotlight, that spotlight has kind of turned into a microscope, and that doesn't always feel great. So I had to ask Don Cherie, now that stuff is starting to open back up, how can we task white audience members with taking care of us? How can you keep our books?
Listen. Listen and look for us. Then elevate those voices. Buy their stuff. You know, support them. Tell your friends. Elevate them on your social media. You know, like, share their things. Like, lift them up. You know, that's how they can show up. Authentically.
Listen for us. Look for us. Elevate us. And another thing, get pissed.
Like, sometimes, even if it pisses you off, art is supposed to make you feel, right? Go to dinner after the show. Talk about what you heard, what you thought, how it made you feel, and then go further than that, you know? Figure out why. Anyway. I'll pull my soapbox back now.
As we do in each episode of Homegoings, we'll take a deep listen to a song by the artist we're featuring. In a bit, we'll hear Don Cherie's song, For Keeps. But before we do, I want to continue unpacking her values around authenticity. Because as with all Black musicians, in order to understand our art, you need the proper context. You need to understand us. I was talking with a friend the other day about Black excellence, a term that's been hashtagged and trending for a few years now under pictures of Beyonce and Jay-Z dressed to the nines and living their best lives. I think I've used it a couple times, but my friend quickly fired back at me, Black excellence is bullshit because it's pressure. If everyone who is Black has to be excellent, there's no room for Black averageness or Black mediocrity. You know, how white people get to be all the time. There's no room for normal. This blew my mind. Being Black and mediocre in this world has always been one of my biggest fears. And it hurts to think of how long I have tirelessly fought to overcompensate for that. I never knew mediocrity was an option, even sometimes. And Don Cherie says she's all about relaxing the reins on that particular form of pressure. Authenticity and a deep understanding of self is her Black excellence.
I totally stand for Black fallibility. Let me explain. I think that pressure to look the part, act a certain way, be polite so that you're not seen as angry, to be amicable in a situation that is not safe, just so that you don't seem like a threat. I think I've fallen into that so many times in my life where I was afraid to use my voice. And then when I did use my voice, disaster struck.
She says sometimes lessons learned in painful ways can be a gift.
And something clicked in me the last crappy job I held. That was part of it, where I just realized that, okay, disaster was going to strike anyway. And I know I was afraid of it, and that I'm treating them as if they're holding the treasure, right? What I would say to another artist, you are the treasure. And what they are is an obstacle. So you have to move them out of your way, even if you have to get angry to do it. And if they're going to view you as a threat, they were going to do it anyway. So take a deep breath. Step off the ledge and just be who you are. Show up as you, and the right people are going to see you, and they're going to surround you with all the support you need.
I have to say, I've cried at every one of these interviews. It's just been so wonderful to unpack some of this, this this blackness and these burdens that we carry through, you know, this catharsis, like just through these interviews. So thank you. That's beautiful.
You're gonna make it.
Well, I think we all need to hear it, right? It's.
Black. I've taken back the word black for these episodes, and here's why. I get a little worried about straying too far away from the storytelling of the black experience when we bring up George Floyd. All you have to do is watch one Spike Lee movie to know that these issues between police and black people have been around for a long time. So I think it's important in these conversations to talk about blackness. It's not an outfit we can change. We are cloaked in our blackness, and this cloak determines how we are treated, how we are feared, and how we are killed. But Dawn Cherie says she still refuses to downplay her blackness in any way, shape, or form.
I have dreadlocks that are down to my waist. I am, bronze skinned, kind of scarred, couple of tattoos.
Especially when it comes to her looks. Not only is she black, but she wears the color black all the time.
I am generally head to toe in black because I feel comfortable in it, unless I'm dancing or modeling for some artist or other that needs more color.
This authentic way of being and looking takes work. Dawn Cherie recalls some moments that reminded her that when you're black in Vermont, you can be yourself, but you might not always get away with it. After all, some people are still grabbing black people's hair.
Had a woman grab my hair and get mad at me because I looked at her like she was just, yeah, it was like that. I'm looking at the expression on your face and it was like that. She grabbed
me. I can't help it. That's crazy. She got mad at you for it?
She got mad at me because I stopped what I was saying and looked at her like she had lost her mind. The idea that you can reach out and touch another person. So it was like, wow, you're touching me. What is going on?
Black hair in Vermont deserves its own episode. But for now, non-black Vermonters, can we all just make an agreement to stop touching it? Like, let's just stop that. If you want to get close to black musicians without actually touching them, their music is the right place to start.
Might just be for keys.
And when I think about that same authenticity that shows up in Dawn Cherie, the person, the bookkeeper, the fashionista, and the black woman, I think about her music. It's not necessarily that she is genre-defying. It's that I don't think any of the genres out there do her music justice. Her first love is the blues, and her others are rock, folk, and reggae. So as we start talking about her song, For Keeps, and soon have a deep listen, I'm creating my own genre descriptor for her. Honey-soaked pain.
The baby's nursing from the funeral.
And about those four pillars I keep mentioning, joy, rage, healing, and grief, one of them didn't make it in this song at all.
Well, I can say that joy does not show up in this song. This song is, it's a call out. Is the ultimate what the hell is wrong with us? Like, what is going on with humanity that we are literally in our own pool, so to speak, and not understanding the connection of our actions with what's happening in the world.
And if you think For Keeps was inspired only by Black issues, you might be wrong. She says this same neglect, abuse, and murder we see in Black communities is really just a mirror of sorts, reflecting how we treat our world.
For Keeps came at a moment. I was watching this documentary called Blackfish, and it was about whales and stuff in captivity. And it doesn't seem like it connects, I know, but it hit home for me. It struck a nerve in me that we don't have any respect for them. We don't have any respect for the environment, for ourselves, for animals, for our children, for anything. Like, we just don't care.
And Dawn Cherie says that this current racial awakening, while it's good, it's also a little sad. Like, what kept you asleep for so long?
for keeps came from me just going, what is going on? You know, wake up, like, wake up. We don't get our proverbial shit together, we're going to fail. Like, the earth is just going to shake us off like so many fleas, reinvent herself and go on. We're going to be messed up. You know, there's only so much sustainability we have as human beings.
In thinking about how I'd like to end this series, for now, I like to think less about solving some of these systemic issues we've talked about here, and more about finding ways to keep these important conversations top of mind. I like to think about compassion. With buzzwords like murder, accountability, and reckoning, I fear white people are doing one of two things: attacking each other or attacking themselves. Neither is useful. So in order to stay in the fight, Dawn Cherie recommends compassion. Yes, for others, but begin with yourself.
So that's where For Keeps came from. It came from this frustration and this ferocity. And then I found compassion for others by looking at my own fallibility, by looking at my own culpability. Like, I'm also part of the problem. So there's a verse in there that there's plenty of blood on my hands, but the bones are steel. Here in my stance, like, I get my own culpability. Let's move. You know?
There is plenty of blood on my hands, but blood on what I got on. But the bones are still here in my stance, but blood.
We started out this series talking about how people die and how people grieve. But what about how we live? In the spirit of Dawn Cherie, let's close with a little bookkeeping. Are you pretending racism doesn't exist in Vermont? Are you listening without being defensive? Are you reading, researching, and learning? Are you having hard conversations with the people closest to you? Are you being compassionate with yourself and others? Are you supporting Black business and Black art? On that last one, we got you. Dawn Cherie says to get in the zone, grab some of your favorites.
Yeah, wine helps. Vibe out on what's being said there and figure out, you know, say, what can I do with that? Where can I go?
Now, let's take a deep listen to Four Keeps.
shadows where no matter there, love, darkness breathes while actions just be for keys. In the absence of self-deception,
That's it for today's Unfractured. The Homegoings production team includes producer Myra Flynn and executive producer Angela Evansy. Our production team is managing editor Lydia Brown and producer Emily Aiken. Our digital producers are Lodi Reed and Abigail Giles. I'm Connor Cyrus. Be kind, smile, and drink water.